Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.25 billion back to our customer owners over the last 8 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Now, stop humming, it's everything that changed. That Warped Tour made you open your brain. Eric Vanek is here, so remember the name. Remember the name. Hey. He got the waiver wire for the week. Tell you who to start and who to give a seat. Dropping the podcast every week. You know the knowledge is elite. After the show, we gon' hold a Lombardi. Celebrating like we throwing a party. This the blueprint and I know they gon' copy. Stop humming intros always. Cause this is America's game.
Hey everybody, welcome into America's Game, episode number 92. I'm your host, Eric Vanek. You can find me on X at Eric Vanek NFL, and you can also follow the show at America's Game Pod as well. And this week, I am joined by Mr. Josh Hudson from Club Fantasy. Josh, what's going on, buddy?
How you doing, man? Always good to start a show with a fire fizzle, fire intro. Love that.
Right?
Love
that. Yeah, he's... Yeah, the song's awesome. Video's awesome. I love both of them. I wouldn't change any of them for anything, man. They're really good, so I appreciate that. But yeah, man, NFL draft's over with. Finally got it done with. What did you think? What was your big takeaways?
The first round wasn't as I don't want to use the word electric, but I know Adam Schefter tweeted out that, you know, expect some explosive trades. And I mean, really, outside of the Jacksonville jump up to 2, I didn't really think it was like anything crazy. I mean, obviously, Atlanta moving back in, giving up a future first felt a little off, considering that I just didn't really think there was anybody at that back end that kind of warranted a future first. You know, Giants moving back in to pick a quarterback. A lot of people kind of predicted that. I didn't really think there was a lot of like explosiveness, and you know, of course, you know, the team sort of rebuffing Howie when he was trying to move up, and then he gets the guy that he wanted to get at 31 anyway. So that's just Howie being Howie, and Eagles taking W's continuing. So
yeah, it's just like the Ravens and Eagles. It's like clockwork. Just a really good player is going to land in their laps, no matter what happens, where they pick. It doesn't matter. There's just a good player lands to them all the time. So yeah, I like the Campbell pick for them, even though, I follow the Eagles, been a fan for a while too, and just, you know, they never take linebackers in the first round. So
I know that's what was really shocking, but I do think that they're probably going to use him more as a pass rusher, yeah. At least at first, just to kind of see how he works within that rotation. I'm curious to see how much, if any, weight he's going to put on, because for an edge rusher, he is on the smaller side, not gonna lie. Yeah. But I know that was kind of a critique when they took Nolan Smith as well, and a lot of the reason why Nolan Smith ended up sliding was because he wasn't the biggest linebacker. Campbell weighs less than Smith, so that's why I'm kind of like, we're gonna see how this works out. But you know, I think really what he ultimately becomes is a chess piece on that defense for Vic Fangio, somebody that he can kind of move around. He can play in the middle, he can play off ball, he can play on the edge. You know, they can use him in different packages to kind of rush. You know, maybe he doesn't have the, you know, the 10 plus sack numbers, but you know, he's able to make plays in coverage, run stopping, you know, blitzing on occasion, you know, and maybe he ends a season with five sacks here and there, whatever. That still becomes a key piece on that, you know, really young defense. When you really look at, they don't have a ton of veterans on that team.
Yeah.
I think Zach Bond might be one of the few that actually has a second contract.
Right.
Everybody else is on rookie deals.
Yeah. I mean, it's just crazy how talented and young that defense is. They're only ascending still. So,
yeah, they've really hit on a lot of those picks over the last few years. It's wild.
I think a lot of, you know, the reason the first round wasn't as explosive is Genty just went right at six. Like, there was no Raiders weren't trading it. And, you know, there was talk of Denver moving up and, you know, maybe the Bears moving up for him. I think that just stopped when the Raiders took him, and that's kind of ended the fun for everybody. And then we only had the Jackson Dart trade up and the other one that you mentioned, the Falcons one.
For James Pierce, yeah.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, so, look, kudos to the Falcons. I mean, they recognized how dog shit their pass rush has been, not even since last year. I mean, it's been this way for almost half a decade. Like, they just, every move they make, just nothing pans out. Every first round pick they make, nothing pans out. So they basically just doubled down. I thought they got a great value in Jalen Walker flipping to 15, which, again, I mean, he's another guy that I kind of felt that the only reason that he would have fallen was because more people maybe saw him as a linebacker versus an edge rusher. It's pretty clear that Atlanta's likely going to use him as an edge rusher. James Pierce Jr. is probably one of the better pass rushers in this class, but that's really all he does is rush the passer. So
yeah,
that's a lot of the reason why he fell. And again, I mean, I think really them giving up a future first just boiled down to they didn't have any other draft capital to give up. So they needed to be proactive and get their guy. But, you know, it really just kind of felt like a move that you make when everybody's on the hot seat.
Yeah.
Like, that's really what that move felt like. And you know, Raheem Morris is going into year two. I know Fontenot's been there for quite a few years, but it just really seemed like the pressure was on them and they needed to do something. But, you know, for the last, 4 years, they've spent first-round draft picks on the offense.
Yeah.
Maybe in their mentality is, like, we've got to fix this defense now. It's beyond time. Like, we dumped a lot of free agent resources into last year. They were better. The pass rush still sucked. So this year, we've got to put all the chips in on the pass rush. But, I mean, considering what they were able to do really in this draft, it was edge rushers and it was safety. That's what they were going to fix. So, you know, they've still got Jesse Bates back there. I know they brought in Simmons only for 1 year, but Bates really hasn't fallen off at all. He's still one of the better safeties in the league. So I think, you know, him being that veteran presence, bringing in, you know, Xavier Watts and then Bowman Jr. from Oklahoma, somebody that, you know, can provide mentorship and leadership for the younger duo there. Hopefully, if those guys pan out, the Falcons are setting themselves up, you know, better for the future. And obviously Morris being a defensive guy, you hope that their defense is going to be able to keep pace with what should be, you know, if Penix continues to grow and, you know, make strides based on how he finished last year, that offense will be good. So the defense is that.
Yeah. I definitely love the Bowman and Watts picks too. So those were good. And I think with Pierce, I'm guessing he had to be a top 10 to 15 player on their board for him to, for them to just go, hey, we got to move up to get this guy. So he probably makes just sense. Fell.
I mean,
right,
but again, I don't think they picked until third round. Maybe.
I don't remember.
Or was it the second?
I think they, yeah, I think yeah, they had, think a, they, had get, a second
they had like they a mid up. Second or something and moved all the way up into, you know, sort of that back end of the first. But I mean, obviously that's a steep drop back for the Rams, which, I mean, they're kind of used to. They went how many years without having a first round pick? It's like, ah, fuck them picks, whatever. So,
now, which, now speaking of, I love next year.
I was gonna say Gladstone's press conference when he was talking about the move up to get Hunter, and he's like, well, you know, I kind of have some experience in the whole, you know, fuck them picks mantra. Yeah. That was just gold. Like, I love the move up to get Travis Hunter for Jacksonville. I love the mentality of this young guy. Like, I'm actually really excited for Jacksonville's future. If he's going to be aggressive, I mean, coming from Philly, we have a very aggressive GM. He's taken some swings. He's obviously missed, but he's hit on some as well. So I think having that I'm not going to be scared mentality, like, I'm going to trust our board, I'm going to trust our scouts, I'm going to go up and I'm going to get our guy and we're going to build this foundation. I love that mentality for Jacksonville.
Yeah. I love the pick for Jacksonville. I wanted Hunter for the Browns. They traded back, got a future first, another second out of it. So I think the value is fair, but we'll see what happens. I mean, the Browns have multiple holes, so I get it. From their perspective, I'm making that trade. So
yeah, it always sucks when, you know, you bypass any opportunity to, you know, grab one of those elite prospects. And I think really, like, and we throw this term around all the time, generational, elite, those types of things. If there was a generational talent in this class, it was Travis Hunter. And you don't love the idea of giving that up. But again, like, there's so many holes on this Browns team. You know, you put somebody right next to Myles Garrett that, you know, opens up rush lanes for him. Like, you know, Mason Graham being somebody that, you know, he can run stop. He can be a penetrator, disrupt the timing of the quarterbacks and all that kind of stuff. Like, that's going to make that defense so much better, or at least it should. And, you know, we've seen really good Jim Schwartz defenses. I mean, even in Philly, we've seen him. He was a defensive coordinator there. So, like, getting that, you know, that wide nine penetration, like, that crucial to the success of the defense. We know that offense is going to take a step back. When you have five quarterbacks on your roster, you have zero quarterbacks. So this offense needs to, they need to run the football and need to play good defense and just pray to God their whatever quarterback lines up behind the center to take snaps isn't turning the football over. So how are you going to do that? You got to start in the trenches on defense. So getting that Mason Graham pick, getting that future first, that's Cleveland setting themselves up for, look, maybe we don't have the quarterback on our roster for the future, and that's fine. But we have two firsts next year where we can either make a move up, depending on how we finish, or we can grab one of the quarterbacks with one of these picks and still add another piece for next year. Like, and that's, to me, that's the right mentality to go about. Mm-hmm. Andrew Berry, their GM, he's been there for a while. I don't think I feel like with Jimmy Haslam and the ownership there, for as bad as they are, they're not blaming the front office for the Watson debacle. That was basically an order from the ownership, like, hey, we need to fix this. You know, this is the deal that I'm signing off on. But, you know, they did what they did. It's an opportunity for the front office, the coaching staff, to kind of hit that reset button. Stefanski is a 2-time coach of the year. He's not a bad coach. Like, he is a good coach. I think the offense can kind of get back to doing what Stefanski does well, which is run the football, focus on running the football. And they spent two of their draft picks on running backs, getting Quinshon Judkins, I believe at 36, and then spending a 4th-round pick on Dylan Sampson. So they're adding a little like thunder lightning there, kind of similar to what Ohio State had with Judkins and Travion Henderson, who went 2 picks after Judkins. So they can utilize the speed aspect of Sampson with sort of that bruiser, you know, carry the ball, you know, 250 times, whatever it is with Judkins, and kind of do what they did all those years with Nick Chubb, Kareem Hunt, kind of mixing in back and forth. So I'm curious to see how Jerome Ford mixes in with this mentality and kind of new-ish direction, or getting back to basics direction with Stefanski on offense. But I think there's a lot of room to like that ground game in Cleveland in 2025 and beyond.
Yeah, and like you said, they just got to play really good defense. Last year wasn't so great, but the year before, they were one of the top defenses in the league, first year under Schwartz. And then, like you said, run the ball and, you know, just don't have the quarterback kill you. And I think that's probably what they're going to go for. I mean, I think if everything goes well, I mean, they should be a 500 team. Like, that's kind of what I'm thinking.
I think that's best case scenario. Yeah. I mean, and that's the thing is, like, you look at the quarterback room. Obviously, it's not great. 40-year-old Joe Flacco, yes, we know the success that he's had, but let's be real, he's 40 years old. And he really did not look that great last year. So we can, you know, I think with people that are, they're latching on to Flacco, it's, we need Jerry Jeudy to be good. Because the only way that Jerry Jeudy is going to be good is if Joe Flacco's our quarterback and is just slinging it and, you know, just risk it for the biscuit kind of thing, right? That's not the kind of game in my thought process that Stefanski wants to play. He wants to run the ball, play good defense, not turn the ball over. The guy that's going to help you with that, in my opinion, if you're going the veteran route, is going to be Kenny Pickett. Like, let's not forget that for all of the not great stuff that Kenny Pickett does, he was on a team that had that same mantra, right? It was run the football, play good defense, don't turn the ball over. Kenny Pickett has a winning record as a starting quarterback. So he's somebody that can go in and run the system, right? The upside in this quarterback room, in my opinion, is Shedeur Sanders, right? I know that there's all, you know, all the talk with, you know, he should have been a first rounder. Leagues are teaching him a lesson, blah, 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 whatever it is. The simple fact of the matter is, in my opinion, there's no elite traits with Shedeur Sanders. He's a good quarterback. I'm not taking anything away from him. He's a guy that if he were to go in and win a job, he can help you win games. He can be accurate throwing the football. He's not going to turn the ball over a ton, but he's going to take a lot of sacks. And this offensive line in Cleveland really is not good. It hasn't been good really for the last couple of years. They've got a lot of aging veterans. They don't have a lot of young pieces that they can grow around. So he can at least, if you put him behind that line, it's not going to be the first time that he's...
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Seen pressure in his face. The problem that Shedeur has is in his mind, he thinks he's a better athlete than he actually is. And that's what causes him to take more sacks than he should take. Okay. Kenny Pickett's going to get rid of the football. Joe Flacco's going to get rid of the football. The difference is Flacco's going to try to force throws because he has such a big arm. Shedeur doesn't have that big of an arm. Kenny Pickett's going to just get rid of the football. And when you look at that wide receiver room that Cleveland has, they outside of Jerry Jeudy, and I'm not a big Jerry Jeudy fan because he drops the football a ton. He's only going to make plays when you actually give him a running lane. And there's not really many of the quarterbacks on this roster that's going to give him a running lane after the catch. So I would expect a huge step back from Jerry Jeudy. But outside of that, like I like Cedric Tillman. I think he's a solid piece as a second option there. If they had a true number one on that team, and I don't think they do. So this pass catching core really leaves a lot to be desired. Love David Njoku. I think he's probably going to be the best pass catching option on this team this year if he's able to stay healthy. But there's options there to play with, but it's going to revolve around the running game. That's why I'm all in on Judkins this year.
Yeah, me too. I'm taking him real high in my rookie drafts, like 106, 105, somewhere in that range. I'm comfortable taking Judkins. So, yeah, I'm with you on that. Let's get into – yeah, we'll just go kind of by position and kind of talk about all the guys. So we'll start at the quarterback spot. Cam Ward, what did you think of him as a prospect? Because I know you're a Miami fan. What did you think of him as a prospect? And do you think he has the ability to ever be a top 10, you know, dynasty quarterback?
So, I mean, we talked about this a little bit on the South Harmon stream on Saturday because Mike and I were kind of getting into it about, like, the, you know, the long-term value with Cam Ward. And, like, we've kind of seen with, you know, young rookie quarterbacks, like, 2 years ago, it was C.J. Stroud that kind of shot up to, like, QB3 in Dynasty, right? Obviously, going into startups this year, Jaden Daniels is sort of that rookie from last year that shot up rookie drafts, right? I think the biggest thing with Cam Ward is – he's not going to run like Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, Jalen Hurts, Jaden Daniels. So for me, his insulated value kind of caps itself at like QB6, QB7. And that's if he comes out and has like a 25-6 touchdown interception ratio this year, right? I think if he ends up putting up numbers like that in 2025, I think that's going to get the dynasty community hyped up, because the idea is that Tennessee is going to look to try to find a young wide receiver one. Because let's be honest here, Calvin Ridley, like we've always wanted him to be a wide receiver one. He's always operated better as a 1B, and he's going to be 31 years old, I believe, heading into 2026, right? So at a certain point, the wheels are going to fall off. I understand he missed a couple of years because of mental health, gambling suspension, etc. But age is still age, no matter how you slice it. So there's still going to be opportunity for Cam Ward to, you know, make some strides. And I loved him as a prospect, but he does have a little bit of Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde in his game, because he is somebody kind of similar to what I was talking about with Shador, where he wants to make plays. And at a certain point, at, you know, the more snaps that he takes, you know, the more years in the league, he's going to learn that, you know what, it's okay to throw the football away every once in a while. What I like about Ward is that he does have the athleticism to be able to get away from pressure. He's going to take off. I agree with Mike, where I think that that like 300 yards, for maybe 400 yards, is a good metric stick for what he could do realistically year in and year out if given the opportunity, because he is going to scramble. But he's going to be somebody that, when you're talking dynasty, he needs to be consistently throwing 30 plus touchdowns. And while I do believe that in theory he does have the talent to do that, I don't think you go number one overall. Even in a bad quarterback class, you don't go number one overall if you don't have that kind of upside. I think the biggest thing is going to be, is Brian Callahan, as a play caller, going to give him that kind of opportunity? I want to believe yes, because it is a derivative of that, you know, Cincinnati Bengals offense. We've obviously seen what Joe Burrow can do year in and year out. The difference is Joe Burrow has Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins. Cam Ward does not have that. So that right there, until you get pieces on that offense, if they, you know, if they don't make a big trade to get an established guy, if they don't draft like the next Ja'Marr Chase, which I don't really see that in the draft coming up until 2027, and that's only if Tennessee's lucky. It's just going to be hard for me to see Cam Ward being more than, say, QB10, QB12 going forward in the next couple of years. So, you know, I'm fine spending that 102 on him in rookie drafts. Even if I don't necessarily need a quarterback, quarterbacks still have more insulated value in Superflex rookie drafts than anybody, than any other position. Unless like Travis Hunter turns into OBJ or Malik Nabers, which again, I don't know if that's going to be the case simply because he's still going to be playing defense. So I think even that is just going to cap his upside some. But a top 10 quarterback in Superflex is still going to have more weight than a top 12 wide receiver, unless it's a top 5 wide receiver, in my opinion.
Yeah, so he's going to definitely need some more weapons around him, and they got him a couple in the draft. It wasn't like, you know, anybody to write home about. Round
picks on him, though.
Yeah, fourth round
and picks. I think that's the problem. Like, I like Amanor. You know, I mean, somebody that came in and put up 200-plus yards on Travis Hunter in college, like, right. There's something to work with there, right? But the simple fact is it's a fourth round pick, right? Even when you look at DK from Florida, who went in the, I think it was the first pick in the fourth round. Amanor, yep, also went in the fourth round. And they picked up, you know, Cam Ward, slot guy from Miami, Xavier Restrepo, who I love, by the way. You know, they still have veterans in front of them, right? Like, they have Van Jefferson, they have Tyler Lockett. Obviously, those guys aren't anybody that truly should be keeping a rookie down if a rookie is going to succeed. But they're going to be relied upon, at least in the first half of the season, throughout OTAs, to kind of help a young quarterback get comfortable in their space. Maybe if the wheels just absolutely fall off and they're, you know, 1-7 through 8 games, then, you know, you're probably going to see more of the rookies, because at the end of the day, those guys need to get snaps, and we need to see, and the team needs to see, we need to see, hey, can these young rookies, these young fourth round picks, can they do something, right? I'm not going to bank on fourth round picks. I'll throw dart throws on them in rookie drafts. I mean, Amanor's is going typically in the fourth round in rookie drafts right now, which I'll take a dart throw there. Zero issue with that. I'll even take a dart throw on Restrepo, because I think there's plenty of, you know, running backs or wide receivers that, you know, I'm not super high on, and I know that they have built-in chemistry. Of course, you always run the risk that Restrepo doesn't even make it out of camp because he's a UDFA, but at least there's that tie that, hey, if we want to make our number one pick happy, we got to keep his guy around, right? So I'm pretty confident in the fact that I think Restrepo is going to make the team, and I think that having somebody like Tyler Lockett there can really help him grow into becoming a really good slot receiver in the NFL.
Yeah, I agree with you on all those points. Bringing in Jefferson and Lockett, I think they kind of already knew, hey, we're going to take Cam Ward here. And, you know, let's get a couple veterans in there. Ridley's a veteran. Obviously, they drafted the two young guys. I think their tight ends are pretty decent, too. Like, Chig really came on at the end of last year. Yeah, he came on. I think he could be the second receiving option on this team this year and have a, you know, back end tight end one type of season in fantasy. Gunnar Helm, you know, he had the ankle injury at the combine, hurt his ankle, but I think he's a better player than that. To get him where they got him, I thought it was good. They still have Josh Wiley, so they got some tight ends there. Pollard and Spears were pretty decent last year, a lot better than I thought they'd be. And they literally have the best line coach in the league in Bill Callahan. So
no, they have the second best.
Okay, second
Jeff
best.
Statlin. Don't sleep on Jeff Statlin, man. Come on. Statlin, well, you, yeah, baby.
Yeah, so either one, I'll give you those are the top two.
And, they have a legendary offensive line coach in Bill and Callahan. We'll call it that. That's fine.
Okay, that's fair. But yeah, so I mean their offensive line's just gonna get better. You know, I think moving Latham over to right tackle, I believe it is, that's going to help things. So, yeah, I mean, that improves two positions with their signings that they got in free agency. So, yeah, I'm excited about Cam Ward. I have him right now as quarterback 13 in Dynasty, and I could easily see him getting at least to the top 10 by the end of the season. So, and I agree with you on this rushing ability, too.
Yeah, when you really look at, like, QB6 through probably, like, QB16, I think in reality, you can make a case for just about every single one of those guys to be QB6.
Yeah.
I think
that's fair.
Because so many of them are like right in that same realm of don't rush a ton, but rush enough, has the 30 touchdown passing upside, has the 4,000 yard passing upside. But, you know, in a bad season, they're at 3,322 touchdowns, right? Like,
yeah,
it's just any of those guys could be that at any given day. I still would put, you know, Burrow in that, you know, 5 to 6 range. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, Stroud is kind of in that lower 10. I think Ward could very easily be there. You know, you can make a case for Brock Purdy, even though I'm not the biggest fan, just because of that, of Kyle Shanahan's system, especially if he ends up getting this extension. Like, that obviously tells you that, hey, he's going to be there for a while. They're putting pieces around him to make plays. You know, there's quite a few that you could make a conceivable case. Even Bryce Young. I mean, look what he ended up doing. They get him a wide receiver one in Tet McMillan. He's a guy that, you know, is probably, or should at least be looked at as, you know, a top 15, 16 option that, you know, in a really good season could be QB6 in any given way. Baker Mayfield too, like 40 touchdown passes last year. People are just kind of sleeping on him because he's now on his fourth team in what, 6 years? Like,
yeah.
So he's producing.
Yeah. He was really, really good last year. So, and he's got all the weapons. They're putting all the weapons around him. So yeah, he's got one of the best casts around him. So I agree with you on that. I put actually at Baker Mayfield one spot ahead of Cam Ward right now. So that's probably, you know, where he's at.
Oh, that's more than fair. Yeah. Yeah. I think it'd be more egregious if you had Ward above Mayfield, truthfully. So,
right. Yeah. I mean, I'm giving Mayfield his props for last year, honestly.
Yep.
So that's why I did it. Yeah. Jackson Dart, he was the next quarterback drafted to the New York Giants. They traded up to get him. Obviously, from all the rumors, reports, this was Brian Daboll's guy. He wanted the Giants to go get him. They went up and got him. Probably going to start or sit for half the year, and then maybe he comes in at the end of the year if things aren't going well. I think ideally they'd probably want just Russell Wilson to play all year and Dart kind of sit. But yeah, what did you think with Jackson Dart, and what do you think his prospects are going forward?
I like Dart. I think in today's NFL, where quarterbacks definitely need to be a lot more mobile than statues behind the line of scrimmage, there's a definite plus there. I think he allows you a little bit more creativity on offense. I don't want to, you know, compare him to Josh Allen because that is just insane, but you know, the things that Josh Allen can do with his legs and keep a defense honest, where you can run more RPOs, you can do some kind of, you know, QB draws, design QB runs, those types of things. You have similar abilities with Jackson Dart. The biggest thing with that is you need to be able to coach some of the inconsistencies with him. Footwork issues, you know, arm issues, like little things like that. I think he's got a good arm. He can make plays. The biggest thing you worry about with any quarterbacks going to New York can they handle the media? That is first and foremost. Like, and that was a point that I had with when, you know, after they ended up going Carter, what quarterback would Dable and the Giants, what quarterback would they want? And obviously you saw all the talk throughout, you know, the college season, off season, all this stuff, like the custom Giants cleats that Shedeur Sanders had, like the meetings that he would have, you know, maybe the owner fell in love with Sanders, whereas the coaching staff wanted Dart, et cetera, et cetera. If it came down to a tie and John Mara said, I'm going to break this tie, I'm fairly certain that Mara would lean on the side of the guy that he knows can handle New York and the media, right? Because Shedeur can play football. Like, I don't think that there's so many limitations in his game where Dart should have been such a higher draft pick, just in my personal opinion. But Shedeur has grown up with a camera in his face and microphones in his face. He's Deion Sanders' kid. He can handle the media. Are we sure that Jackson Dart can? Like, he's from Utah, played at Ole Miss. Like, this screams Zach Wilson all over again when it comes to media personalities, right? Like, it's going to be a challenge for a young kid. For this to work, Jackson Dart should not play more than one football game this year, and that should be in Week 18. That's ultimately what needs to happen. He needs to learn from Jameis. He needs to learn from Russ how to handle the media, how to read a playbook, how to understand the terminology, and how to figure out when a safety drops back versus one that comes up in your face. That's what Jackson Dart needs to sit and learn how to do. And I don't think that that's going to happen if the Giants just fall apart because of injuries, or because the running game doesn't work out, or the offensive line still isn't improved. Like, if those things end up happening, and the same way that Buffalo ended up playing Josh Allen after, like, what was it, week 8 or 9, I think, was right around the time that he ended up playing his rookie year. Like, I don't think that the Giants can work Jackson Dart in the same way that they work, that Buffalo worked Josh Allen, because the leash is so short on Joe Shane and Brian Dable after the disastrous last 2 years that they're not going to have that opportunity. Like, they need to just let him sit, let him learn, and say, look, this is the game plan. And all the pressure from Mara and the front office and the owners and all that crap, like, they just have to let him sit, because Russ can throw the ball deep enough to where Malik Nabers can have 175 targets and fantasy managers will all be happy. He can throw the ball enough to where Wandale Robinson has 130 targets and only has 600 yards. That's fine. Whatever. I don't care about any of that. If they need the future of this team, they put it in Jackson Dart's hands. They need to do anything and everything to prepare him, and putting him behind a shitty offensive line in week 10 ain't it. But I like him as a prospect, and I think it's a decent landing spot. And I think with some seasoning, he can be really good. And I think he is a back end of the first round super flex pick in rookie drafts above anybody else. And not just because he has first round draft capital, but teams told us how they view this quarterback class. If there wasn't a second quarterback that went in the top 5 or the top 10, it's only an okay quarterback class. But Jackson Dart can run. He offers rushing upside, and he was a first round pick. That deserves to be a first-round super flex rookie pick.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. And it's going to be interesting if, let's say, Russell gets hurt early on. Like, did they bring in Jameis or do they bring Dart in? That's going to be the one that's curious to me.
They've got to bring in Jameis.
I think so, too. But I'm curious to see, oh, man, let's just go with Dart. You know, we'll see how that happens, if it happens. But, yeah, I agree with you. Dart shouldn't play until, like you said, week 18, that last game of the year or whatnot.
Treat him just like the Chiefs did Patrick Mahomes. That's how I would do it.
Yeah, exactly. So I threw Dart in my initial rankings at quarterback 24, and I think that's fair, especially with his rushing upside. If he does start next year, he's their guy. I think he can move up, especially because he has Drake May, Daniel Jones type rushing upside. Like, I think he can get 500 rushing yards, maybe more.
Yeah, very easily.
So I think he's got that upside in him.
A lot of people were throwing around Jalen Hurts as a comp for him. I don't know about that.
Truthfully. Yeah, I don't think I agree with that.
I think coming out of college, I think that Hurts was a better passer than Jackson Dart. Mm-hmm. But I mean, like we've seen some really good Jackson Dart film.
Yeah.
But we've also seen some really bad, really bad ones too. Yeah. You know, like there's a lot to work with, which is a good thing, right? Like coaches want to be able to bring in a guy that they can coach up and fix the mechanics. Mm-hmm. Obviously we've seen what Dable and staff were able to do with Josh Allen. Cause he was another guy that came in. He was a big time project, but we knew the upside with Josh Allen.
Yeah.
They were able to work out the kinks. That's what ultimately got Dable this head coaching job. Right. So now it becomes, can they work the same magic twice with Jackson Dart, who in truth is a much lesser prospect than Josh Allen was.
Yeah. And I mean, I like these pieces they have put around him. You know, as much shit Joe Shane gets, like he drafted 3 offensive starters for them last year. And obviously Neighbors was going to be a stud, but he still got Tyrone Tracy later on and he got Theo Johnson. Those guys are starters for this team. So I give him kudos for that. And I think he, you know, Scadabo, I really like, you know, and adding to all these other guys, Wandale, you know, coming off of the injury from last year, he finally started to kick it up last year. He's a good PPR guy. So yeah, I like what the Giants are doing here too.
I mean, and like you said, adding Scadaboo, they did add at a guard, Marcus Mbeu.
Mbeu, yeah, in the fifth. Yeah, they got him
from Purdue. Like, obviously that's a big piece there. Truthfully, what they really need to do is they just need to bite the bullet and turn Evan Neal into a guard and see what happens.
Yeah. Like,
you know, he's a liability at tackle. You know, the biggest thing for the Giants offensive line is getting Andrew Thomas back. I think he only played 6 games last year.
Yeah.
And you get him back, put him at left tackle, that changes that offensive line big time. But from there, now you need to call plays that, you know, negate the poor offensive line play, plain and simple.
Yeah.
Because when you look at San Francisco, for instance, their offensive line is dog shit. It's awful. They have Trent Williams and that's it. Right.
Yep.
But the offense worked because the way that they scheme the plays puts, you know, average, above average offensive linemen in a position to succeed with quick play calls, whatever it may be. Not, you know, you don't have these long developing plays that, you know, put an offensive line at a disadvantage. Those are the types of things that Brian Dable needs to start doing on offense to negate the poor offensive line play. And getting somebody like Scadaboo behind that line who can break tackles.
Oh yeah.
That was one of the best picks that they could make.
Yeah. I mean, him and Tracy should make a really good duo too. So I like
that. Both of them got to learn how to hold on to the football. Tyrone Tracy had 5 fumbles last year. Scadaboo, I believe, had 10 fumbles over 3 years.
Yeah.
Over the last 3 years.
Hold on to the football. We'll bring Tiki Barber back and Tiki can teach you guys how to do it. Cause he had the same problem.
Yep.
Next guy up I wanted to talk about, though, I have Jalen Milroe as my next one, and that's just pure rushing upside, man. Like, if he starts at some point, hopefully not this year. Hopefully he gets the Mahomes treatment, too. But if he ends up starting and becomes, you know, somewhat decent quarterback throwing the ball, he has the upside to be in this tier one of quarterbacks with Josh Allen, Lamar, Jaden Daniels, Jalen Hurts, and have, you know, 1,000 rushing yards in a season. So, I put him above Darnold, Stafford, Geno Smith in my dynasty ranks. I'd rather have Milroe than those guys, even though I might have to wait a year. But I just think the fantasy upside for him is too great to pass on.
Oh, 100%. I mean, anytime you have a quarterback with the type of rushing upside that Jalen Milroe has, like, he's going to be somebody to covet, right?
Yeah.
So I'll go back and I'll use Anthony Richardson as an example. So, like, you know, something that last year for us at Club Fantasy, when everybody was anointing Anthony Richardson as like the next big thing, and they're like, hey, he's going to be a top 3 guy this year because this is what he's able to do with rushing upside, blah, 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 this and that, et cetera. Rushing upside is great. If you can't throw the football, it doesn't fucking matter. Plain and simple. You still have to be able to throw the football. And that's what Anthony Richardson cannot do. Under 50% passing.
Yeah, terrible.
Awful. Just absolutely awful. That's why he did not finish and produce for fantasy the way that everybody thought he would, because he could not pass the football. You look at somebody like Jalen Milroe. He's got a big arm. Now you just have to be able to corral. He reminds me a lot of Justin Fields in his ability as a runner and the fact that there's arm talent there. You just have to figure out how to center it. And I think when you look at the situation in Seattle, obviously they brought in Sam Darnold, gave him a 3-year deal. Let's be real. This is a 1-year deal for Sam Darnold. This is a show us you can do it without Kevin O'Connell. That's what this deal is. And they put the pieces around him there. They invested in the offensive line. They had some decent pieces. I know there were some injuries on the line last year. They added Zabel. I think there was another offensive lineman they added in this draft. Let me just double check. But Zabel's versatile enough that he can play tackle, guard, even center. They added another tackle out of Kansas in the 6th round. Like, there's depth there. Rickman from Iowa in the 7th round, another tackle. Like, they have depth there. Charles Cross, they got a couple years back as a left tackle. You know, he can be an anchor for that team. Like, they have pieces there on that line that, you know, can provide Darnold the type of protection that he had. Biggest thing, obviously, is how is he going to mesh with Kubiak as a play caller versus what he had in Minnesota with Kevin O'Connell. JSN had a breakout season last year. We know what Cooper Kupp's able to do when he's healthy. Now it becomes, can Cooper Kupp do what he did with Sean McVay in a different offense, right? They've got MVS, track star himself, you know, sprint warrior, whatever you want to call him. You know, they added Torrey Horton in the 5th round. He's another pick. Speed guy. You know, he can kind of be another deep threat in this offense. But there's not going to be the same kind of pieces, obviously, you know, going from Minnesota where you have Justin Jefferson to JSN, right? And Cooper Kupp is obviously going to be a big drop off. But Darnold basically has 1 year to say last year wasn't a fluke, right? You bring in someone like Milroe. Now you can work different packages in. You can kind of do some running here. You can do some draw play, short yardage. This can basically be the same exact way that Baltimore started to work in Lamar Jackson.
Yep.
You know, they would work him in on some running plays, and then they kind of let him start the last 5 or 6 games of the season.
Yep.
And they built the offense around, you know, throwing the ball less than 20 times and just running the football a ton, right? Could Seattle do that? Sure. But I think what's more likely to happen is you kind of see these like packages that feature Milroe the same way that Kubiak schemed plays that featured Taysom Hill.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably going to be the better comparison. But I think the biggest thing that we as fantasy managers maybe don't realize is when you're subbing a quarterback in and out constantly like that, it tends to mess with your rhythm. Look how, like, there were games where Derek Carr started really, really good. And then the more they would bring in, you know, Taysom Hill to kind of run and, you know, do these sort of like wildcat type plays, and it would really start to mess with Carr's rhythm. And then the bottom would just fall out and the Saints would lose the game, right? I think that's a big thing to worry about if you roster Sam Darnold. Can he handle this yo-yo act if you're bringing in Milroe for some of these different packages? It's going to potentially throw Sam Darnold off a rhythm. Now, I'm with you. I would much rather take the flyer on Milroe than, you know, invest in a Russ or even a Sam Darnold, honestly. If I'm doing like a startup draft or something along those lines, I will say Jalen Milroe being a 3rd-round pick could very well end up being a wasted pick. It's a 3rd-rounder. There's no investment from a team to say this is the guy that we need to spend a ton of time developing and giving him shots, right? It's just not the case. If you don't have first-round draft capital, sometimes even if you have first-round draft capital, Josh Rosen, for instance, right? Like, sometimes it's just you have a very short leash, plain and simple. That's why my big worry with Shedeur Sanders, same thing. He's a 5th-round pick. I don't care that people, some people maybe had him as a top-5 guy or some people thought he was a first-round talent. Fact of the matter is he went in the 5th round. Teams don't owe him shit. It's the same thing here with Jalen Milroe in the 3rd round. Like, teams don't owe him shit. So he's got to be able to come in, got to put in the work. Judging by everything that's been leaked from like interviews and all this kind of stuff, like, he seems like a really good kid and he seems like somebody that wants to come in and work. I love that mentality. I absolutely do. And again, it's a good situation because the short leash with Sam Darnold, Drew Lock being the backup. At this point, we already know what Drew Lock is. He's not going to be a long-term starter by any means. So like, Milroe is a guy that this team can invest in and work towards getting involved. But at the end of the day, he's not the one that's making $100 million. That's Sam Darnold. So take that for what you will.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah, with Milroe, it's up to him now. He's got to improve his passing, and he's got to get NFL quarterback coaching and learn, you know, better footwork and all that stuff. He's going to have to learn all that stuff from an NFL level coach. So hopefully he gets that. Hopefully he improves over training camp and through practices and all that. And I think he's got a shot, man, because, I mean, in our fantasy drafts, if you can get him, I mean, I personally would probably take him as early as like the 202, 203. And you could probably get him a little bit later than that. That's worth it for me, because if he does start and ends up becoming this guy that we think he could be, like, it's top five fantasy upside for us. So definitely we'll take a shot at him.
Yeah, the drafts that I've been doing this week, he's kind of been going in the mid to late second range, yeah. Which I personally, that's kind of where I'm happy to take him. Mm-hmm. Which honestly, it's causing a lot of really good value at wide receiver to fall, which
yeah.
I'm more than happy to take that too. So
yeah, we could talk about that here in a little bit when we get to the receivers. But last quarterback I wanted to bring up and was Tyler Shuck from the Saints. And I wasn't a huge fan of him, but hey, Daniel Jeremiah, McShay, all these guys like him a lot. NFL teams told us they liked him pretty decently to take him in the top 40. And it sounds like, you know, from yesterday, Nick Underhill, who's one of the best Saints reporters out there, kind of talked about like Derek Carr might not even play this year. And maybe Shuck is the week one starter for them. So that has kind of changed my tune just a little bit on Shuck, that, you know, I'm same range as Jalen Milroe, like mid to late second, probably more late second. I'm willing to take a shot at him if he's going to be a starting quarterback. Like, I think you can make a little bit of value on him at some point if he is the week one starter. So yeah, what did you think of Shuck, and do you kind of agree with me? Would you take him like in that mid to late second if he's going to be the starter?
Yeah, so I currently have him in my overall Superflex rookie rankings. I have him as 24th overall, which is
okay, so right about the same part.
Yeah, so I mean, it's the end of the second round, which I mean, again, like, I think based on draft capital, I think you can definitely make the case that he should go above Milroe. I'm fine, you know, arguing that tune. I wouldn't, only because Shug doesn't have the rushing upside that Jalen Milroe has, right? Like, and plus, when you talk about the injury history that comes with Shug, like, that's somebody that I don't really want to invest too much in. I was doing one draft where somebody traded into the back end of the first round to take Shug.
Yeah, that's, you know, crazy.
Over Milroe, even over Jackson Dart, which I thought was a little bit much.
Yeah, but that's
I know he's been a big Tyler Shuck guy this offseason, and you know what? He went up, he got his guy, so be it, whatever. But again, for me, when it comes to fantasy, it's, you know, where's the upside lie, right? Like, I'm with you. There's a chance that Shuck could start this year at some point. Maybe he is the week one starter. Maybe he only starts four games, right? At the end of the day, if the Saints are really bad, which that could very well happen, they could end up with a top 10 pick this year, and they find themselves in a position to draft a quarterback, Shug's value goes from here to here really quick.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it tanks. Like, I don't care that they spend a top 40 pick on a quarterback. They didn't spend a first round pick.
The new Will Levis, yeah.
Exactly. Like, this is Will Levis to me. So, like, I get, you know, if you're in a position to where you need depth at quarterback, take him, right? Because the moment that he's named a starter, sell him off for, hopefully a late first, right? Like, give a contender, you know, some depth there at quarterback and take some value, or, you know, use him as a pawn to get a better position player at wide receiver, running back, right? Like, I'm perfectly happy doing that, even if Shug starts 17 games, because I don't expect the Saints to be a contender this year. That team is just straight up bad. I think they have a bottom five roster in the NFL.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Especially when you have a wide receiver one who can't stay healthy. And they don't have much else behind him either. Like, I love me some Rashid Shaheed, but even he's somebody that can't stay healthy, right? Like, they don't have a ton on offense at outside of Alvin Kamara. Like, he is their offense. So, you know, I really think, like, you're in a position to where this team maybe doesn't even score 20 points a game. That's not going to be a lot for fantasy. That's not going to insulate a quarterback's value. That's certainly not going to put you in a conversation to where you're probably competing for an NFC South title. So it's just for me, like the circumstances with Shug, again, kind of similar with Milrow. Like, there's a chance, sure, that Milrow could start some games because Sam Darnold just turns back into New York Jets Sam Darnold, right? Like, maybe they say, all right, let's see what we got. At least he's going to be fun to watch and we could put butts in the seats. Shug could very well be the same thing, minus the rushing upside. But there's still that possibility that ultimately he's on a bad team that ends up in a position to take a quarterback next year in what should be a better quarterback class. And now you're stuck holding the bag.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think, yeah, the offense leaves much to be desired. I think you're right. Like 20 points a game and probably is like their ceiling almost. Olave and Shaheed, Brandon Cooks, Kamara, Juwan Johnson, that's about it. Like there's no Taysom Hill to come in and run trick plays again this year because he got hurt at the end of last year. So I don't even know if he's going to be healthy this year. So yeah, it's going to be
all, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad they invested in the offensive line with their first pick. That'll help them, but yeah, they need some more firepower on this team. So we'll see what happens with Shuck, and I agree with you, probably end of the second, early third, you could probably get him. And you know, and Superflex especially, I'll take a shot at that guy for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen him go all over the second round, honestly. Like, and yeah. And I mean, I get it. Like, you know, he's walking into an open quarterback room, so you know, there's value there, no matter how you slice it. And you know, starting quarterbacks, you want those on your fantasy roster, plain and simple, yep. Especially in Superflex leagues.
Yep. Yeah, we'll skip over Shador. Everyone's kind of beat that to death, so we'll skip over that one. Let's go to the running backs, though. I think Jenty we could probably skip over, too. Like, everyone knows he's a stud. He's probably a top five running back in Dynasty. I have him at third overall for me in running back rank, so I think everybody knows about him. But what did you think about Hampton to the Chargers, and kind of where do you think he would rank out in Dynasty ranks for you?
I mean, I've seen him already penciled in the top 10 in some people's dynasty rankings. I think anytime you have a running back that goes to a system that wants to run the football, like, I'm all about it. You know, like that's going to be somebody that should have at minimum top 15 value at the position. I think the biggest question when it comes to Hampton is, does Greg Roman want a true workhorse? Because when you look at the two different stops, like two of the different stops in his career, right? Like, you look at his time in San Francisco with Jim Harbaugh, then you flip that and you look at kind of what he was doing in Baltimore, right? You look at San Francisco, he used Frank Gore as a workhorse. There was no RB2. Like, it was Frank Gore and Frank Gore. That was it. He was the running game. And then you sprinkle in, you know, with Colin Kaepernick and having that rushing ability at quarterback. Then he gets to Baltimore. And when they draft J.K. Dobbins, it's, oh, Dobbins is going to be the new Frank Gore. He's going to get all these carries. He's going to be the RB1, blah, blah, blah. You know, his dynasty value shoots through the roof. Obviously, we know what happened. Dobbins couldn't stay healthy. They ended up running more of a committee. You know, Dobbins, Edwards, and whomever. You know, Justice Hill sprinkled in there, etc.
I think they even brought Mark Ingram in at some point.
Mark Ingram came in at some point. Absolutely, yeah. So, you know, you have now here in LA, of course, they had Dobbins and Edwards last year and sprinkled a little Kamani Vidal towards the end of the season. But again, they ran sort of more of a committee approach, right? So has Greg Roman changed his stripes and wants to run a committee? Or does he want another Frank Gore and somebody that can handle 250 plus carries? Because the difference is that you're not going to get 700-800 yards rushing out of your quarterback in Justin Herbert the way that you did with Kaepernick or Lamar Jackson, or at least have that kind of upside. Right.
Like, yep.
Justin Herbert, you can run. I mean, he set a career high in rushing yards last year with 306. But I think that 300 to 400 is probably that limit with Herbert, because at the end of the day, his biggest strength is his arm. The one thing that I do love is that everybody was talking about how Justin Herbert wasn't going to throw as much, that, you know, you can basically write him off as a QB1. Well, he ended up finishing as QB11. So in theory, yes, he was a QB1. 23 touchdowns, 3 interceptions. They improved the passing offense. He's going to throw the football more. Fun fact, while that was the fewest pass attempts per game of Justin Herbert's career last year, that was the second most called passing plays that Greg Roman has ever called as an offensive coordinator. The only other year where it was more was the one year, I believe it was 2021 when Lamar only played 12 games. They ended up throwing the ball like over 600 times.
Okay. Yep.
So they're not afraid to throw the football. Like the whole thing with the press conference was, you know, you've never seen Justin Herbert with a running game, right? Like they're still going to like, you don't keep a loaded bazooka on a display shelf unloaded. Like, let's be real here. You want to let that loose, like let him throw the football. They're just going to let him be more efficient because they have a quality run game or ground game to offset. Like they don't need him to throw the football 600 times, which is fine. When you bring in Amarian Hampton, now you have that potential for a three down back, right? Like we know what he can do as a pass catcher, which again, they're not going to throw the football a ton to the pass catcher. They're going to throw less than 100 times to the running back. And more than likely, Hampton's going to top out at like 50 targets. So you're talking maybe in a really good season, he has 40 catches. So at the end of the day, what you're hoping for from Hampton is 250 plus carries. For 2025, the hurdle here is the fact that they brought in Najee Harris on a one-year deal, which is fine. Like, you do free agency before the draft. You don't know if you're going to have an opportunity to draft Amarian Hampton. That's why you signed Najee Harris. But now that you have Amarian Hampton, it becomes, are we going to run this split backfield? Like, is Najee only going to get 200 carries? Is Hampton going to get 150 this year? Like, that is a real possibility. Long term, 2026, maybe Hampton takes that 250. But at the end of the day, he's not going to have 50, 60, 70, 80 targets, right? So to me, that's going to limit his fantasy ceiling. Unless he ends up breaking away and running a Jonathan Taylor where he has 1,800 yards and 20 touchdowns or 18 touchdowns, whatever it is, that ceiling is very limited. Like he doesn't have that Ashton Jeanty ceiling. He doesn't have that Bijan Robinson ceiling, CMC ceiling, right? So I think like I'm okay with that RB10 range, but I think that's kind of the cap in my opinion. Unless everybody that you have in front of him gets hurt in a year, which again could very well happen. I mean, it's a running back position. So, but I think 10 is a good range. Like I think anywhere from 10 to 13, you can probably make a pretty solid case for Amarian Hampton. And honestly, I think you could probably go even higher, maybe RB8.
Yeah, that's where I had and penciled in right away was RB8. I think there's his upside is really good, but with Najee being there, I think that's probably what you're talking about. Like maybe one of them's getting 200, the other one's getting 150, and that's fine for a first season. Like I think,
yeah,
you know,
I agree.
Yeah. So, you know, kind of work them in, let them get used to the NFL. I think their offensive line's really good. So yeah, I agree with you on that one. Hampton probably about, you know, RB 8 to 10 is probably where he's at in dynasty rank. So yeah, I'm good with that. Yeah, and then we'll go with both Ohio State running backs, Travion and Quinshon. I have them at 11 and 12 in Dynasty, so they're right up there. And, I mean, I was kind of looking at some of the numbers earlier for Travion, kind of what McDaniels has done with receiving running backs in New England. So he had 2012 Woodhead, 40 catches, 446 yards, 3 touchdowns. 2013, Shane Vereen, 47 catches, 427 yards, and 3 touchdowns. 2014, Shane Vereen again, 52 for 447 and 3 touchdowns. And then 2015, he had Deion Lewis, who had 36 catches, 388 yards, and 2 touchdowns. And that was only in 7 games. So, I mean, I think Travion Henderson's a way better prospect than any of these guys were. But there's, you know, he has shown in his offenses, he's more than willing to give his running back 40, 50 catches. And I think that could be even more for Travion Henderson, especially in our PPR dynasty leagues. Like, Travion's should have a really good rookie season. And, I mean, obviously Stevenson's going to be there, too. He's going to take some of the work, rushing work. But I think Henderson, PPR-wise, should have a really good season.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing with Henderson is how is McDaniels going to use him? We know he's going to be the passing down option, and that ultimately is going to inflate Travion Henderson's value. And that's really why I like this landing spot, because if there's going like any of these top landing spots, like we kind of knew like there were teams that needed running backs, right? Like they needed, you know, that guy. But you go to offenses like the Chargers, the Browns, Pittsburgh, like they're not going to throw the ball a ton to a running back. New England is going to throw the ball a ton to a running back. So in your PPR leagues, Henderson should be a guy that I think you can make the case for probably RB3 in this class, right? The question then becomes, is he going to get 150 carries? Because that's really what we don't know with McDaniels. Like, McDaniels typically has that thumper, and then he has the pass catcher, right? Like, you know, for a while it was, you know, you go back, you have the Ben Jarvis Green Ellis, right? Like the 800 yards, 12 touchdowns, whatever it is. LeGarrette Blount, 1,000 yards, 14 touchdowns, but not a ton of passing work. That was the, you know, the James Whites, the Shane Vereens, like those were the compliments, right? And then those guys maybe on a good year had 80 rushing attempts. If you only get 80 rushing attempts for Travion Henderson, this is not going to be a good rookie draft, right?
Yeah.
Like that, and that's what you don't want. But we've seen in college that Henderson can handle the 120, the 200 carries, plus all of that passing down work. But the problem is when Ohio State used him as a true three down back, he really wore down. He got hurt. They brought in Quinshon Judkins this year to kind of pair with Henderson. And that worked out really well. Henderson was able to be effective not only on the ground, but as a pass catcher, and could work off of Judkins. Now it becomes, how does McDaniels want to use it? Because Ramondre can do all of that. He can handle the 200 plus carries, and he can be an effective pass catcher. What he can't do is hold on to the damn football. So do you just use him as a bruiser and stop throwing him the football, but then still give Henderson 120 to 150 carries? And then 60 plus targets, because if that's the Henderson that I get, or that we get, oh, sign me the fuck up. He's a top 12 dynasty running back, and it's not even close. But I think 2025 is going to be a really good, good year to kind of feel out his value long-term, which truthfully, that's why I have him as my RB4 once, now that we know the landing spots, because right. I know what I'm going to get out of Quinshon Judkins. I know how LA is going to use Hampton. We obviously know how the Raiders are going to use Genty, right? Like, I don't think we yet know how Travion is going to be used.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think if he can get the 120, 150 carries plus the receiving work, I think that's good. Stevenson does get hurt quite a bit too. And behind him, I believe, is Antonio Gibson still, and that's more of like kind of like the Travion Henderson mold. So there's not really that thumper behind Stevenson if he does get hurt. So if Stevenson does get hurt, I think it's, yeah, Travion's going to the moon. But yeah, I agree with you. I think I'll still take him in my top 12 dynasty ranks for running backs, and his first season I think should be pretty good. Like, I'm not saying he's going to win rookie of the year or anything, but I think it's going to be a really good season too.
Yeah, and I think, again, the biggest caveat too, what do we see a lot with young quarterbacks that know how to run or that use the running game quite a bit to their skill set? They don't throw to the running back near as much. And that, again, that's another worry when it comes to Henderson. So I think that I'm curious to see how creative Josh McDaniels wants to be with Travion Henderson, because I don't think that you draft him in the second round unless you truly want to utilize his skill set as a pass catcher. And that means splitting him out wide, putting him in the slot, using him not just out of the backfield on, like, you know, flat routes and arrow routes and things like that. You let him run routes like a wide receiver. Because if he's doing that, then he has that dynasty value. The other upside is, look at the wide receiver room right now in New England. Like, it's not great. So there's going to be opportunity for them to use Henderson like a wide receiver. And that's what we should be banking on.
Yeah, I agree with that. Like, the only receiver I want is Kyle Williams and maybe Diggs if he's healthy. That's about it. Yeah. So, yeah,
I love me some DeMario Davis or Douglas out of the slot. Like, you know, sign me up for a Wes Welker light season. I'm all about it. But there's not long term value there, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. And then you said Judkins was your guy that you had above him. Go ahead with your thoughts on Judkins.
Yeah, I mean, just look at how Stefanski uses a running game. I mean, look what Nick Chubb was able to do all those years. Like, if he can even be, you know, 80% of Nick Chubb, because I mean, look, Nick Chubb is Nick Chubb. Like, that's just a hard back to replicate. But if Judkins can be 80% of that, that's a top 10 running back in Dynasty, no doubt. Like, that's 200-plus carries. That's an opportunity for 10-plus touchdowns. That's an opportunity for 1,200 rushing yards. Like, that's just what this offense and how an RB1 in this offense, that's the upside of it. So Judkins should slot right into that, and he's going to be a younger version of what Nick Chubb was giving you the last couple of years, which obviously wasn't much, him dealing with the injuries and everything. But, you know, even going back to, you know, 3 years ago with Nick Chubb, like, that's 1,400-plus yard upside, right? How many running backs have that kind of upside right now? I think there was, like, five that hit that mark last year. But before that, there was, like, one every year that even had an opportunity to hit that. So,
yeah,
that just goes to show you, like, those are opportunities you want to chase at the running back position, because when you're rushing for 1,400 yards, you're going to have an opportunity for 10-plus touchdowns. And when your quarterback doesn't have 25, 30-plus touchdown upside, that goes to show you that they're going to lean on the running back. So that opens up the opportunities there. So, like I said, even if Judkins isn't going to be a guy that sees 50, 60, 70 targets, like, Nick Chubb was still at one point a top six dynasty running back when he was only seeing 40 targets a game because of what he's able to do on the ground. That's Judkins' ceiling right there.
Yeah, Chubb was just a super efficient runner there, exactly, without all those catches. So, yeah, he was, like, always up there. I think I see Judkins more in the Kareem Hunt type of style. So I think he can kind of do the same thing, you know, that Kareem Hunt was doing there. Still get, like, you know, probably 80% of the carries, you know, then you kind of let Samson and Ford battle it out for the other percentage. But yeah, Judkins, he's set up to have a really good year. As long as the offensive line stays healthy, that was the big problem last year. Like, the offensive line fell apart, got hurt, a lot of older veterans on that team. So it should be pretty decent again, as long as they stay healthy. Like you said earlier too, when we were talking about the quarterbacks, like, they want to run the ball, they want to play good defense. So Judkins, definitely easy top six rookie draft pick right now, and definitely in my top 12 of dynasty ranks for running
backs. And I've seen him go as low as 108, and I'm just like,
yeah, trade up, please. Let me trade up.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, that's tremendous value if you can get him there, for sure.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, my next two running backs I wanted to talk about real quick here, Caleb Johnson and RJ Harvey. I mean, RJ Harvey is, like, the talk of the fantasy space right now. And I just looked up some of the numbers of Sean Payton using pass catching running backs at New Orleans. Like, it is insane the amount of catches those guys got. So, like, 2011, Darren Sproles, 86 for 710, 7 touchdowns. 2012 with Sproles, 75 for 667, 7 touchdowns. Then you just go to Mark Ingram, like, who wasn't, like, a great pass catcher, but 50 for 405, 46 for 319, 4 touchdowns, 58 for 416 and a touchdown, and that was with Kamara on the team. Then Kamara also in 2017, 81 for 826, 5 touchdowns. 2018, 81 for 709, 4 touchdowns. I mean, Kamara was just a walking 80 catches every single year. Now, I'm not saying RJ Harvey is going to come in here and catch 80 balls his first year, but I think 50 minimum for RJ Harvey, who's a really good pass catcher too, and it's the same type of offense. Bo Nix is, you know, can do the same things that Drew Brees did, it seems like, so far. I think RJ Harvey, I might have him just too low. What do you think?
I mean, I've seen some people put him all the way up to RB3 in rookie, and I'm just like, all right, can we stop smoking what you're smoking?
Because that's right.
To me, like, you know, and I know there were some people that were pretty high on him pre-draft, and I get that. I mean, you know, back-to-back 1,400-plus yard seasons. I think the biggest thing is that some people might be over-inflating the receiving upside because of Sean Payton's history throwing to running backs. And the reason I say that, this man never topped 30 targets in college. Yes, he can catch the ball. I believe it. He can catch it. But usage is a big thing as well. And if you're not using a running back in that type of mold, they're not typically going to be used in that mold at the next level either. Like, I remember when Nick Chubb came out. I remember when Jonathan Taylor came out. And everybody was like, oh, well, they didn't throw to him in college. But you know what? They have that ability because they flashed it. What happened? Their teams don't throw them the football. So, like, when a team tells you who they are, when a player tells you who they are, it's okay to believe them. Now, again, I understand how much Sean Payton loves to throw the football to running backs, they will target the running back position upwards of 30% of the passing offense. That's why Jaleel McLaughlin is there. That's literally his job, right? He's a UDFA. I get it. There's going to be some opportunity for Harvey. I would still probably, I think 40 to 50 targets, not out of the realm of possibilities. You know, he is a high-volume guy. But I think if you're trying to put him into an Alvin Kamara-type situation to where he can see 100-plus targets, that's your problem, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Because that's just not going to happen. There's one Alvin Kamara, and RJ Harvey is not that.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's an opportunity for Harvey to just be a part of a committee. That's what he's going to be. Like, they spent a draft pick on Audric Estime that last year. They have Jaleel McLaughlin. You bring in RJ Harvey. Everybody sat here and said 2 years ago, oh, Marvin Mims, that was Sean Payton's first draft pick. What the fuck has Marvin Mims done? He hasn't done anything. They basically abandoned him his rookie year and then slowly started to work him into the offense last year, finally giving him some opportunity. But he was losing snaps to Devon Bailey, of all people, a 27-year-old rookie or whatever the fuck he was. So, like, you know, I'm not ready to, like, sell the farm to get Harvey because I wasn't enamored with him, like, pre-draft process. Like, I'm more than willing to bump him up. Like, I had my top five. Those top five guys went in the top six at the position, right? I'll move up Caleb Johnson to five, and I'll bump Harvey to six because, again, like, he got top two-round draft capital. Like, I'm perfectly fine with that. Like, he's a good RB6 there, you know, and then you can follow in line with, like, Scataboo and Tootin and some of those guys. Like, you know, perfect. I'm fine with that. But trying to move him all the way up above prospects that were just flat out better, that also landed in really good spots, that's where I think the mistake is being made when it comes to RJ Harvey. Because, you know, if they're trying to use the excuse, oh, well, this was Sean Payton's guy. Sean Payton drafted Audric Estime last year. What the fuck do I care? Like, it doesn't matter to me, you know?
True.
So he spent a day two capital on Marvin Mims. Like I said, like, there's always going to be times where coaches are fall in love with players, but then when those players just don't see the field the same way when the action starts, he's going to abandon you really quickly. So I'm not ready to just, like, anoint RJ Harvey as the next big thing. Like, I'll invest in him in redraft, and I'm fine with that because, you know, again, like, this is a team that they'll throw to the running back. They want to run the football. Like, that's always been Sean Payton's MO, and that's how you support a young quarterback, is you run the football effectively. He will have opportunities, and it's behind a really good offensive line. I'm just not willing to go that high with him yet.
Yeah. I mean, all the other running backs that we mentioned already, I would take above him. You know, probably Dart, I'm taking above him. We haven't talked about some of the receivers yet. So, like, yeah, taking him at, like, 103, 104 is crazy. I can get behind taking him at 111, 112.
You know, the 106 to 108s, and I'm just like,
yeah.
I'm not, like, he is in my super flex. He's 13 overall. So to me, he's a 2.
Yeah, I think I have him at 11. So yeah, we're right about the same.
Yeah. Cause I mean, like, they're to me, like, with this wide receiver class, there's good value in the sense that I think there's a lot of these guys that are walking into either low passing volume offenses or loaded wide receiver rooms where they really have to come out and show us, hey, I am the guy in this offense. Right. And I think that ultimately is going to push a lot of these running backs that can produce over the next 2-3 years. It's going to push them above the wide receivers, and we're seeing it in drafts right now.
Yep. And then I'm guessing you have Caleb above him.
Caleb. Yeah. Johnson. No, I absolutely love this landing spot for Caleb
too.
Johnson. I mean, they're going to use Jaylen Warren more as the pass catcher. He's been the guy. Like, even when Najee had, you know, 90 some odd targets his rookie year, those targets just suddenly went down because Jaylen Warren kept stealing them, right? But here's the thing. Jaylen Warren has never had more than 150 rush attempts in a season. Ever. Arthur Smith wants to run the football. I think it was 4 of his last 5 years as a play caller, he's called over 500 rush attempts. So, like, you tell me, of all of these running backs that came out this year, outside of Ashton Jeanty, in my opinion, the only one that actually has 300-plus carry upside is Caleb Johnson because of how he's built and the offense he landed in. Even if he only sees 20 targets, You tell me 300 plus carry potential, sign me the fuck up. Yeah. I will take it all day. Yeah. I mean, even at only 4 yards a carry, that's 1,200 yards.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially with, like you just said, I didn't really know that 4 out of his 5 years, he's ran 500 temps. Like, and who's running the ball on this team? Like, you can't give Jaylen Warren 250 carries, you know. You're going to maybe give him 150, and Kenny Gainwell, they sign, he's going to get a couple carries. But yeah, I mean, he's set up to have 250 at minimum. So yeah, I'm with you on that one. I like him a lot. And there's tons of other running backs to go over. We can do that another time. But the one I wanted to definitely talk about, because we were different on about this on the draft stream, is Tet versus Matthew Golden. So I know you're the Tet guy. I'm the Matthew Golden guy. Why do you like Tet over Golden?
Well, prototypical size for one. I think he can come in and he can play that traditional X in Dave Canales' system. I mean, we saw that, you know, how Mike Evans fit in that role in Tampa. Canales was part of that Seattle offense that had, you know, DK kind of running that, you know, more traditional X, you know, and that's truly what they did not have last year in Carolina, you know, his first year as head coach and Kellen plays there. So now yeah, I
Deontay
think
Deontay Johnson was woof.
Well, and look, I'm one of the biggest, if not the biggest, Deontay Johnson guys, but he's not built like an X, right? Yeah. Like, he can be a target hog, but he's definitely more of a Z. Like, he's somebody yeah. that you're going to move around. You know, you're going to run more routes, you know, kind of between the tens more so than anything, and just kind of let him use that yak ability, and because he's one of the more elite separators in the league. Tet McMillan, not an elite separator at all, but he can win your 50-50 balls. He can go deep. He can run those go routes, the nines, the posts, all those different types of routes that are pretty prevalent in Canales' system. So I think when you have that and you can put him with, you know, I mean, they still have Adam Thielen there. So you have a veteran that, you know, these young guys can learn from. Xavier Legette, we started to see some flashes. I think he can, you know, look to maybe take a next step. You know, this offense succeeds with two premium wide receivers catching passes. Like, built in, you've got 20+% target shares to your wide receiver one and wide receiver two. The question is, can Legette take that step? And that's what ultimately we want to see, because they traded up into the first round to get him last year, right? They're invested in these top two guys. So if they're playing off of each other, you have the potential for 125 targets for Legette, 135, 140 for Tet McMillan. Matthew Golden does not have that. I'm sorry. It just doesn't. He's Brandon Cooks, in my opinion. And when you look at how Matt LaFleur calls plays, he spreads the football around so much to all of his wide receivers. These guys don't see more than 5.5, 6 targets a game. So you take 6 targets over 17 games, that's not even 110 targets a game. That would be like not barely top 30 in the NFL in targets. So like, I just, unless he's going to be somebody that had averages like 18 yards a catch and turns like 6 big plays a year into touchdowns, it's just so hard for me to get behind that. Like, I've seen people comp him to Stephon Diggs, and it makes me spit out my drink, because he's not the kind of route runner that Stephon Diggs is. I'm sorry. He's a go guy. That's why I compare him more to Brandon Cooks. Like, I think there's a lot that he can work with there. He can definitely separate on occasion, but I just don't see it consistently in his tape. And that's what makes me worry that he's not going to do anything that truly breaks away from the group of wide receivers that are already there in Green Bay.
Okay, that's fair. I mean, I think Golden is one of the better route runners from the class, and I always saw his separation was a lot better than maybe what you saw. I thought I saw a lot of it on tape for me, especially on especially.
In fairness, you definitely watched more games of his tape than I did. Right. I will admit to that.
Yeah, I mean, I thought I saw a little bit more than that. Now, like, obviously he didn't have 1,000 yards or anything like that at Texas. There's a lot of guys to give the ball down to there too. So yeah, I just thought he's a way better route runner separation. I mean, if you talk to McShay and these guys, they all like Golden better too. So I'm going to trust those guys as well. And I just think he's the wide receiver one there. Like, they haven't taken a wide receiver since 2002 in the first round. So they finally invested in it. Christian Watson's probably going to miss half the season. Jaden Reed's just a slot guy for me. Romeo Doubs, that's just a possession guy. Like, Matthew Golden is walking in as the wide receiver one. But I agree with you, too, about LaFleur and those guys spreading the ball around. Like, Tucker Kraft, Musgrave, the running backs, all these receivers are going to catch ball. So I bet you Tet probably has more targets than Golden does this year. I probably agree with that. I just think Golden's just the best receiver on this team. I'm going to take the better quarterback in Jordan Love. Better offense right now. I think Golden should, I don't know, say 70 catches first year. That's what I'm hoping for. If he can get me 70, get close to 1,000, that's kind of what I'm looking for.
70 would be a stretch. I don't think there's been a Packers wide receiver that's hit 70.
Probably like Jordy Nelson, yeah.
We'll see. You're talking Davante Adams with Aaron Rodgers.
Oh, yeah, Adams. Yeah, I forgot. Adams, Jordy Nelson, yeah. Yeah, we'll see what happens there. Like you said, I think maybe I'm thinking about it where they're not going to spread the ball around as much. But I just think without Christian Watson, too, I think they kind of gave up on Wicks, too, at the end of last year and weren't really using him. Yeah, he couldn't catch. So
I mean, honestly, when it comes to skill, I think Wicks is probably the best wide receiver on that team when it comes to skill. You just can't catch the football.
Yeah, he can't catch it. So, but I think Golden can catch it. He can run really good routes. I think his separation's good. So I think he's going to be a little bit better than people expect. So I have them like back to back in my rankings, but I personally had Golden above Tet, and nothing, you know, from the draft is going to change my mind on that. I think he went to the better team, the better offense, better quarterback. So I'm going to stick with my evaluation on it and go Golden.
I mean, and that's fair. Like I'm fine, like, especially when you look at draft capital, like, both of them went in the first round, right? Like,
right.
So if Golden ends up, you know, if he was your, if he was higher ranked in your process pre-draft, they both got the same round draft capital, I think it's fair to say that, hey, I'm going to keep the guy that was there pre-draft. Like, that's my guy. All right, cool. That's fine.
Yep.
I mean, you could argue the differences in, you know, top 10 versus, you know, top 25, whatever. But at the end of the day, you're right. Packers are a better team than the Panthers. My thing is, I think we've already seen the Packers ceiling. We haven't seen the Panthers ceiling.
True, yeah.
So, to me, the Packers are not a Super Bowl team. They don't have somebody that can just take over on offense. They don't have, like, a dominant pass rusher that can take over in games either. So, like, that to me is just really where they're lacking when you look at, like, the top teams in that that NFC. But really, what that pick felt like to me, just as an outsider, that felt like all of the noise of, we don't have a wide receiver. We haven't taken one in over 20 years in the first round. The draft is in Green Bay. Let's just give the fans what they want. Like, that's what that pick felt like to me. It truly did. Because the way that you look at how the rest of the wide receivers kind of went off the board there, like, I didn't have Higgins as my number four heading into the draft. Like, him and Burden kind of win in the top 10 picks of the second round. And you see, like, Trey Harris, Jack Besh, see Kyle Williams is what the wide receiver 9 off the board. Like, I didn't think he was the 9th best wide receiver. Tesla was definitely not the 10th best wide receiver, in my opinion. Like, the wide receivers just really did not shake out the way that I thought they did. And I don't think that the Packers offense was really lacking speed at the wide receiver position. They were lacking size. They were lacking somebody that can take over a game. The games that I saw with, you know, the big plays from Golden, it wasn't because he was taking over a game. It was because the defense just fell apart and it was, hey, I'm open. Throw me the damn football. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it wasn't just catching it and making a move, making a defender miss, breaking tackles, all that kind of stuff. Like, he's not taking over a game. He was taking advantage of a blunder on the defense, which, again, smart wide receivers do that, and I get that, but you still need somebody that, I'm going to take over this game. Tet McMillan has that capability.
Yeah, I agree with that. So, yeah, that one's going to be an interesting one to kind of watch over their first season, see how those guys do for sure. But let's do America's favorite game, and then I'll get you on out of here, man. So, you're an Eagles fan. I got to know, who's your favorite Eagles player of all time?
Ooh, all time? Oh, man. I'll be honest with you. I really got into my Eagles fandom because of Donovan McNabb. So I will be hard-pressed to not say McNabb. I will say there's been a lot of favorite players. I love that Shady McCoy, D-Jax, Jeremy Maclin era. Those three were staples on my fantasy teams. I've always been a big Shady McCoy guy. Liked him a lot less when he spoiled Endgame for everybody, but you know, is what it is. Huge T.O. fan. Always loved T.O. I wish we had him more than, you know, the year and a half or whatever it was that we had him, but you know, he's always been a big personality, but you know, just to come off a broken ankle in 3 weeks and do what he did in the Super Bowl, like,
crazy.
That's the type of mentality you just don't see nowadays from athletes. And I miss that. And T.O. he's always been one of my favorite wide receivers. So even just to get him for any amount of time, on the Eagles, definitely big. Look on defense. I mean, Reggie White obviously was big time. But one of my favorite defenders, and again, we only had him for a really short time, D'Amico Ryans. I absolutely loved him. Loved him when he was with the Texans. And again, like Chip Kelly bringing him over. Like, I always say there was a few really, really good things that Chip Kelly did in his era with the Eagles. Obviously, the sports science side of things, like, you know, the injury bug was not as prevalent when he was there in Philly. And they have kept a lot of pieces from that since then. But bringing it, D'Amico Ryans to man the middle, even towards the twilight of his career, like, because he was always one of my favorite players, and getting him again for a short time, like, I love that and I appreciate it. But you know, Jalen Hurts right now he's my guy, definitely.
Jalen Hurts, okay.
You know, especially with how, you know, he's kind of handled a lot of other things recently. I won't dive into it too much, but He reminds me, I'm a big New York Yankees fan too. He reminds me a lot of Derek Jeter. He's somebody that shows up. He's a lead by example kind of guy. He's not going to say a lot. But the things that he does say, there's emphasis and there's impact behind it. And he's somebody that when he moves, you take notice. And it's exactly what Derek Jeter was. And while Derek Jeter was never, you know, the best shortstop, he was always one of the best. He was a World Series MVP. He really should have been a league MVP at one point. I'll never forgive Justin Moreau and the writers for that one. But, you know, he's a Hall of Fame guy because he won. He knew how to win. And that's Jalen Hurts to me.
Yeah, I think that's fair. McNabb was my guy as well. I think we talked about it on your show or pre-show. We talked about that. But Brian Dawkins, always loved him. Jeremiah Trotter, I always loved him.
Oh, I love that we got a son now too. I love that.
Yes.
Such a great draft moment.
Yeah. I'm trying to think, like, those early days, like Hugh Douglas was big too in those early days. I really liked him a lot. And that was with Dawkins and Trotter and those guys. Then, like, we got to the Terror.
Trent Cole was another one. I love Trent Cole.
Trent Cole, yep. Then we had the freak, Javon Kearse, for a little bit there too. He was good.
Brian, yeah, he was actually from Fort Myers area because he played at Florida as well, and that was the time when I was living in Fort Myers, Florida. So I heard a lot about Javon Kearse. Yeah, loved him. I mean, we got him obviously after the first contract, and yeah, I'd definitely be remiss if I didn't say Brian Dawkins. Like, he was one of my favorite safeties of all time.
Oh yeah, I always loved safeties, like, growing up, because I'd always like.
I mean, that was the position I played in high school, so, like, I gravitated to safety.
Oh, yeah. So
Taylor was my guy, like Ed Reed, you know, Dawkins, like those were the guys.
And I'd always watch, like, those old NFL film stuff on, like, ESPN and stuff, and you watch, like, old Jack Tatum from the Raiders when he would just fucking destroy people.
Oh yeah.
Steve Atwater. Yeah, the good old days. So yeah, like, Dawkins reminded me of that, and then, like, that whole era, like Polamalu, Ed Reed, Sean Taylor, Bob Sanders, like, there's just all those safeties in that era. Yeah, it's really good. Brian Westbrook, I absolutely loved him. He was incredible, just receiving back. He was like a PPR machine, just 90 catches, it seemed like. So yeah, he liked him a lot. And then, there's just so many freaking guys that they've had. Shady McCoy, that was another good one. I always liked him. DeSean Jackson.
And Macklin was always my dude. I like Macklin a lot better than D-Jax. D-Jax was a lot more flashy. Macklin was just the guy that came in and did his job. Had the one great season before he left for Kansas City. But, yeah, I actually like the jersey. I always, when I go through and I buy jerseys, I'm always like, all right, who's going to be on the team for a while? And I look at, all right, should I get this, to blah, blah, blah. Like, I definitely got a Macklin jersey before I got a Deshaun Jackson.
I had a Jackson. I had Westbrook. I had Brandon Graham. I think when he got drafted, I got his. Yeah, there's a couple.
Malcolm Jenkins was another one. I had a Malcolm Jenkins.
Yeah, that's a good one. Oh, I just had it in my head. Who the hell was it? I forget. there's so many guys from those teams that I absolutely liked. So, that's who I was going to say. I always remember the one year I think McNabb got hurt and Jeff Garcia came in and saved the day. And he beat the Cowboys on Christmas Day, took us to the playoffs. I think they might have won one game or lost in the first round. But everyone kind of shitted on Jeff Garcia. But like that offense, like that West Coast offense, just fit him perfectly.
And it did. Oh, I mean, that's how he rose to prominence with San Francisco.
Yeah. Everyone kind of shitted on him here with the Eagles, but he just started winning games, man. Once McNabb got hurt, got him to the playoffs. I think they won the division that year. I remember they beat the Cowboys on Christmas Day. That was really cool in Dallas. So yeah, always have a little bit of Jeff Garcia memories too. Go ahead, tell everybody where they can follow you at Club Fantasy and all that, where they can find you on X and all that good stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. You can check out everything we do at Club Fantasy. It's all the same handle, at Club Fantasy FFL, URL, clubfantasyffl.com. Starting in June, we're going to have our Look Inside team preview series firing up. So we'll have some articles dropping on different players with different teams. And we'll be doing some podcasts and stuff that kind of correlate with all that. Let me see. I mean, you can follow myself if you really want to, at the one Hudsonian. That's the number one. I don't post as much, really. I just kind of share what everybody else does, but more to the point, make sure that you are following Women of Fantasy Football on Twitter, Instagram, as well as YouTube. That's at Women_FF. We're coming up on obviously our summers are always big for us because we do our fundraising, raffle off from jerseys, and it's all to raise money for scholarships for Galvanize, which, if you're unfamiliar with Galvanize and you happen to watch NFL games, you've probably seen sideline reporter on Fox, Laura Oakman. That's an organization that she runs to provide women who want to get into sports, whether it's broadcasting, media, et cetera, the tools to be successful. Basically, she modeled it after what she had, basically what she didn't have when she was breaking into the industry. So it's, designed to provide a sisterhood for women to lean on and the tools to be successful in their careers. So all of that you can find at Women_FF, and of course the URL womenoffantasyfootball.com.
Awesome. Yeah, definitely check that out, guys. Check out Club Fantasy and Josh and all those guys over there. I was on there to preview the quarterbacks before the draft. It was a lot of fun hanging out with you guys, so I appreciate you guys having me on, and I was glad you're able to join me on this one, man.
Anytime, dude, anytime. Love talking about it.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll definitely have you back soon. But yeah, at Eric Vanek NFL is mine, at America's Game Pod as well, and then at South Harmon FF. Check us out there. Just launched today. We launched the South Harmon Redraft channel on YouTube. So my first video is up there with Maddie posted his the other day. So check that out. We're going to be launching that, getting into redraft content this year. So me and Maddie will be heading that up, probably doing a lot of underdog drafts. I know I have a shit ton of FFPC credits and stuff, so I'll probably do some of those, talk about that, probably do some live drafts at some point too on YouTube, and take some questions from you guys while we're doing the draft. So that'll be a lot of fun. But Josh, appreciate you joining me, man.
Absolutely, man. And hey, redraft's my bread and butter, so
hey, there you go, we'll have you on again for that. Absolutely. So with that, guys, that's going to be it for this week. We will see you next week for episode 93. We'll see you.